With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines 5 o'clock, of course, brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
The Mariners have announced their 26-man opening night roster. Six starting pitchers on the roster because the M's are going to a six-man rotation this year. Justin Dunn, Chris Flexen, Marco
Gonzalez,
Yusei Kikuchi, James Paxton, Justice Sheffield are your starters. Your relievers, I'm not going to go over all of them. Well, maybe I will. Kendall Graveman, Nick Margivicius, Kanan Middleton, Anthony Mishevitz, Rafael Montero, Casey Sadler, Drew Steckenrider, and Will Vest. How many people have heard of three of those people in the bullpen?
This guy right here is dead.
Cross him off, then.
The Seahawks have given Tyler...
dead.
Cross him off, then.
You've heard of Tyler Lockett, though, and the Seahawks have given him a four-year, $69 million extension, including $37 million guaranteed, and the Chiefs made it official today, signing former Hawk defensive tackle Jaron Reed.
Let's see, what else? College basketball, Zags crush USC, make it to the second Final Four in school history. They'll face UCLA on Saturday after the Bruins beat Michigan yesterday. Houston Baylor 215, Zags Bruins 535 right here on KJR.
All right, 5 o'clock hour sponsored by our friends at West Coast Men's Health. Perform the way you used to. Call them right now, 206-312-7008. You can also check out westcoastmenshealth.com. All right, you're talking Mariners in
yes,
this
sir.
26-man roster, not 20. What happened to the 25-man roster?
It's now 26.
Wow.
Yeah. You want to hear about the rest of the roster?
Yeah.
Infielders, J.P. Crawford, yeah. Ty France, Dylan Moore, Kyle Seager, Evan White. Outfielders, Fraley, Haniger, Lewis, Trammell. Dual threat guys, utility guys, Sam Haggerty, Jose Marmolejos.
Marmolejos.
And then Tom Murphy and Luis Torrens are your catcher. There's a lot of who the hell is that guy on that list for the average baseball fan for sure. And by the way, James Paxton, it sounds like James Paxton is not going to pitch until game 5. He will not be pitching against the Giants this weekend. So if you're looking forward to seeing the Big Maple against the Giants, you're going to have to wait until game 5. Sorry.
I think the who the hell are these guys?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, the people that completely took off last year, and I understand if you did. I mean, I in large part took off last year. And so if you haven't really paid attention to the Mariners since 2019, I would understand that most of this roster is who the hell are these guys. But if you paid even requisite attention, I think you would be pretty familiar with the starters.
Mm-hmm.
You'd be pretty familiar with most of the position, at least the starting position players, where it really is who the hell are these guys
bullpen.
Is the bullpen.
Absolutely.
And it was a disaster last year. I mean, that was the one really sore thumb about this team last year is their bullpen was just flat out terrible. And it's largely different this year, almost entirely different this year. And the question is, all right, how less terrible will it be than last year?
Yeah.
I don't think anybody thinks it's going to be an above-average bullpen.
Well, I think you need a bullpen now because you're trying to win games, right? When you're not trying to win games, who your closer is, who your bullpen is not a huge deal. You want to develop players, obviously, but now you need these guys, including Graveman, Middleton, and Montero, and others, to actually win games for you and close games out. So I'm curious to see what the closing situation looks like this year. I'm also curious about Chris Flexen, who's the new starter in that rotation. I'm pretty sure Chris Flexen was playing in Korea a year ago. He was let go by the Mets, and he spent last year in Korea and had 21 starts in the Korean Professional Baseball League. So he's got 3 years in the majors, all with the Mets, as an ERA at 8.07. 8.07, 27 games, 11 starts, and an ERA over 8 in 27 games lifetime in the major leagues. He's 25 years old and spent last year in Korea, and now he's in your rotation.
Well, you got three of those guys in the rotation I think you feel good about. And that is Marco
Gonzalez,
James Paxton, and Justice Sheffield. Yeah. And then you've got three huge question marks. You just mentioned one in Flexen.
Yep.
You say Kikuchi, who, in my opinion, if he has another year anywhere similar to what he has had since he has been a Mariner, he will be the worst free agent signing, surpassing Sean Figgins, in the history of Mariner baseball. And I've gone back and actually looked at the contracts, compared the contracts, compared the performances, and if you say Kikuchi is on par in 2021 with where he has been the rest of his Mariner contract, he will be the worst free agent signing of all time in Seattle Mariners. And then your third guy is Justin Dunn, who you kind of like, but you just don't know if he's going to pop or not. And there's guys waiting in the wings, starting with Logan Gilbert, who is going to take one of these guys' jobs if in the first 6 to 8 weeks of the season they can't perform.
Well, how do you measure worst or best free agent signing? Based on a combination of production and salary? I guess would be one way to do it. I mean, how much did Sean Figgins make when he was in Seattle? Because Yusei Kikuchi has started, how about this, you'll like this, how many starts you think Yusei Kikuchi has started?
Oh, let me guess. 41
yards.
And he's got a 5.39 ERA in those 41 starts with a 1.46 whip. I mean, he has been bashed to hell in Seattle. He's been awful. 5.39 ERA is 8-15 in 2 years. So, I mean, he was hurt a year ago, or excuse me, 2 years ago, a little bit dinged up, and I think that led to kind of his performance, so we'll see if that matters. But I don't know. He's going to start less games this year because of the six-man rotation. He's 30 years old. He absolutely has been a bust. Are we ready to call him the worst free agent signing in Mariner baseball history? If he ends up playing the entire year and he's not here in 2022, the Mariners will have paid him $33 million.
Okay.
For 3 years. So how much did Sean Figgins make when he was here?
More than that, right? Sean Figgins had a four-year, $36 million contract.
Yeah.
But Sean Figgins, in his first year as a Mariner, had, you know, decent, more success than certainly Yusei Kikuchi has had, and he only played 3 years here, and then they got rid of him. So he wasn't here for his fourth year
career. The problem with the starting pitcher is the starting pitcher can impact a baseball game and muck things up way more than a position.
That's true.
Can ever muck a game up.
So let's look at
this guy out there 24 times this year,
and
you lose 16 of those games, that's a problem.
So Sean Figgins' WAR in his 3 years, 0.8. Negative 1.2, negative 1.2. So that is a negative 1.6 WAR. And let's see what Kikuchi's WAR has been.
You say was at 0.6 in 19 and 0.1 in 20.
So he's still above zero.
Well, we're talking about, we are literally talking about the lesser of two evils.
That's exactly
you
right.
You either want a pipe up the side of the head, or do you want a steak knife into your eye socket? Which one do you want less? Which one hurts less? I mean, both of them are absolute turds. So, and you know what? With the young guys the Mariners have in their minor league system, guys that they've drafted, including guys like Dunn and Gilbert and Hancock, you know, you think if those guys start to turn things on, and they're not going to get a chance to play until the end of April because the minor league season doesn't start for a month from now, which I can't stand. But the minute those guys look like they're ready, if you say Kikuchi looks like he's done, get him out of here.
Exactly, and that's, you didn't have that luxury with Sean Figgins because there was no way, even in that third year, that you could bench Sean Figgins, because back then, and I'm hoping they're not quite as money conscious now as they were back then, but back then, you know how Howard Lincoln operated.
Yeah.
He was like, well, I'm paying him all this money. I have to play him every day.
Well, they have nothing on their payroll for 2021.
Right.
I mean, they added Paxton. The last interview we did with Kevin Mather, you know, he talked about that they were going to add Paxton at, what, $8.5-9 million. But their payroll right now, according to SpotTrack.com, is only $67 million. It's 25th in the league. So they should have no problem eating money, and they should have no problem adding players if they're good enough to do that at the deadline. So excited for tomorrow. We'll be at Jimmy's on First. James Paxton will join us, by the way, on the air. Jerry DePoto, Brett Boone, Torrey Hunter, lots of baseball chatter. We're going to break and talk a little Husky football with one of the outgoing guys who never even got a chance to take a snap during a game. Kevin Thompson's going to join us and talk about his future next on 950 KJR.
Now back to Softy and Dick on your home for the Final Four and the National Championship. Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
All right, boys and girls, Everett Fitzhugh, Kraken radio voice, joining us for his weekly segment, talking hockey at 5:45 tonight.
Yeah, baby!
Here from Scott Service, Mariner skipper, coming up at 6 p.m. this evening right here.
Yay!
Thank you on 950 KJR, but I got a lot of questions for this next guest. I feel like now that his time at UW has officially come and gone, which makes me sad because I was looking forward to watching this guy play, as I know you were as well. I mean, Kevin Thompson from Auburn Riverside High School goes to UNLV, transfers to Sacramento State, and then comes to UW and never gets to play a damn snap at Washington. He's joining us right now on the radio show. And before we get going, can you clear something up for us real quick, Kevin, before we talk some football and talk about your future? Do you mind clearing something up for me?
Let's hear. What do you got? What do you got to ask?
How old are you, really?
25 years old.
You're 25.
Born September 2nd, 1995. Yeah.
Perfect. So 26 this September. So you know that everybody could have come back if they wanted to and played college football for one more year, no problem. Did you even think for a second about coming back as a 26-year-old and playing at UW next year?
I did briefly contemplate it, and I still think I would have been younger than Brandon Whedon, so I wouldn't have felt, you know, too old. I think I would have just been just fine, but no, Coach Lake extended the opportunity for me to come back, and which, you know, I was thankful for, and briefly contemplated it because I really did want to get on the field. It was tough, you know, not being able to play this year. But ultimately I had felt like I had a very long college career, you know, filled with great experiences.
Yep.
And I just felt like it was coming to an end. So made that decision pretty quickly.
That's a good pull, Brandon Whedon. I think Chris Winkie fits too.
He
I
was
think
28 he was, when he won the Heisman.
Yeah.
Chris Winkie was 28 when he won the Heisman. Yeah.
He was exactly. He was like pushing 29 or something.
Well, it seems like yesterday that Softy and I talked to you right when you signed, and you know we really expected that we were going to see you, and obviously Jimmy Lake kept everything really close to the vest. We had no idea it was going to start that first game till like an hour before the game, and we thought it was going to be you, but then we found out that you were hurt. So tell us about what went into that first game. Did you win the job out of camp going into the first game?
I felt like, you know, I had a really strong fall camp and that I was deserving, you know, to play come the first game of the season. But, you know, sometimes adversity strikes and you go through these tough situations and you just got to deal with it and try to get better. But I think Dylan, you know, did an incredible job, you know, as a freshman, and he led the team and played really well, so I was happy to see him play and to support him through the season.
So what happened to you then? What was the injury that you had exactly?
I had a kind of like a upper rib and clavicle kind of deal, freak injury that happened in practice. So I don't want to get into like specifics of exactly what it was, but I'm fully healed now and still really grateful for the experiences that I did have in my short time up at UW.
Yeah, Kevin Thompson again with us. So, because there was a point in time, I think, and correct me if I'm wrong, where we saw you in uniform, right, for a game or two towards the end of the year, or am I imagining things?
No, yeah, I did suit up and tried my best to recover throughout the season. It was going to be difficult to get ready to go at any point during the season, but I did get to a point later when I was ready to play and some games started to get canceled. I was hoping to get in the mix at some point, and then boom, we had the last two games canceled and the bowl game canceled, and that kind of, you know, was the end of things.
Whether it was stated or not, did you feel like you were the starter going into the season the day that you got hurt? I mean, you're taking more than 50% of the snaps with the number ones.
Yeah, I mean, I felt like I was right there, and was ready to go and felt really confident, you know, running the offense toward the end of camp and was getting a lot of reps. And but like I said, I think Dylan also did an incredible job too. So it didn't turn out obviously the way that I wanted it to go, but
yeah,
I learned a ton. I learned a ton from Coach Donovan and Coach Lake. You know, I think they're great coaches, and what they have going on up there can be something really special, you know, especially with the whole old line coming back and Dylan and a lot of weapons. So,
well, let's talk about that, because now that you're no longer playing over at UW, if you want to come work in radio with us and be like a Husky analyst, we always love having guys that can come on the air and talk dogs. So Kevin Thompson, Kevin Thompson, our new Husky insider, is with us on the radio show. We don't know a lot about John Donovan. He's only coached in four games, you know, obviously took some shots downfield, kind of did, I think, everything that Jimmy Lake said they were going to try and do, be balanced, pro-style offense, the whole thing. But for those out there that still don't know a lot about John Donovan and his style of coaching and what he wants the offense to look like, what would you tell people?
Yeah, just, you know, from what I see, I know that people, you know, kind of say, like, that he doesn't like to throw the ball. He likes to throw the ball. He wants to throw the ball. But I think he has a really good understanding of what the strengths of our offense are. And if we're running the ball extremely well, then we're going to run the ball. I know, you know, Coach Lake likes to run the ball. So they're going to try to be really efficient on offense. They're not going to throw it 50 times a game, obviously, if they don't have to. If the run game's working, they're going to stick with it and take their play action shots. But Coach Donovan, he's very passionate, and you see it, you know, on the field and in practice. So, you know, I think he's a great coach. I think he's a good fit, offensive coordinator, and I'm really excited to see what they're going to do this year.
How much more prepared are you for the NFL because you had a pro-style offensive coordinator?
Yeah, I think I'm a lot more prepared. You know, I didn't get to play, but the mental side of it was huge. I continued to learn, you know, throughout the season. He asked a lot of the quarterbacks, you know, asked the quarterbacks to do a lot. You know, a lot of kill plays, checks, flipping the line, identifying coverages pre and post snap, running a huddle, something that I didn't have to do a ton of in my college career. I think that was really valuable for me to just all off season work in a huddle and direct a huddle and lead a team that way. It's something that was different for me, but was really good to be able to do that.
No doubt. Kevin Thompson again with us. Tell us about the pro day experience from yesterday, and, you know, what kind of feedback are you getting? I mean, you know, unfortunately, because of COVID and because of the injury, you haven't had a chance to play in a football game in almost, what, 17 months, 18 months, obviously, going back to your last year at Sac State. So do you feel like you're kind of fighting from behind the eight ball a little bit? What kind of feedback are you getting from the NFL?
No, Pro Day was great. You know, I don't feel like I'm behind the eight ball at all. I still feel like I've improved tremendously, and especially with this off season since the season ended, and, you know, I was training for Pro Day. I feel like I'm more prepared than ever and more physically ready than I've ever been before. So, you know, I've heard some really good things, and, you know, especially after Pro Day, I think, you know, a lot of teams were saying, you know, that I did well as they were exiting the building. So I'm hoping that to get some Zoom calls going here pretty soon, but my agent's been pretty active, you know, talking to teams and such. So, you know, I feel like it was a great experience. I was able to kind of go out there and showcase some things that I could do pretty well that, you know, I think people weren't too sure that I was able to do, you know, jumping pretty well and benching and throwing, things I haven't got to do a ton in front of scouts. So it was a ton of fun, and it was awesome seeing all the guys that I hadn't seen in a while.
Yeah.
That was a ton of fun, just reconnecting with them, seeing what they were up to, how training was going for them. So the whole experience was great.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
You know, and it was a ton of fun.
Did you feel like there was more pressure on you because you didn't have the game film to fall back on at the UW? There was more pressure on you today to really show out?
Yeah, I didn't think of it like that exactly, but I definitely knew that I needed to do something to open some eyes with some of the testing and the throwing and just kind of show off the arm strength a little bit and move around, show that I could move and I was as mobile, you know, as I am. And I think I did those things. And so I'm ready to go. I'm really excited to potentially get an opportunity somewhere. And I'm going to continue to train here around the Auburn area, and I'll pop up to Seattle here and there when I can and try to stay connected with the coaches and the guys up at UW.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
And see what I can do up there in the meantime.
Final thing for a former Husky quarterback and now Husky insider here,
yes,
on
sir.
950 KJR.
We're going to call you again, by the way.
Absolutely,
for more intel.
Man. Are you kidding me? After every game.
Anytime.
Kevin Thompson,
yeah,
join us.
Anytime.
Last thing for us. We are excited about the youth at wide receiver, yet we're scared as Husky fans because Puka Nacua is no longer here. How concerned should Dog fans be with no Puka next year?
Well, that's definitely a big loss. You know, Puka is extremely talented, and I wish him nothing but the best. I've talked to him a little bit, and you know, I'm excited for him to be back home because that's ultimately what he wants to do. And you know, that transferring, you know, I've done it a couple times. It can be really hard, but you know, you gotta make decisions that you think are best for you and your family ultimately. So I know everyone within the program and everyone that's close to him still supports him, but I don't think there's anything to be concerned about. Like you said, because of the youth and those guys, Jalen and Rome and TV, they're all extremely talented. And another off season with learning the offense, I think they're only gonna continue to improve, the whole team that is. And so I think more excited than nervous. Husky fans should definitely be more excited than nervous.
Yeah,
so.
Well, there's
the weapons coming back, a ton of experience, a great O-line, veteran O-line that's played in a lot of games and can move guys around, and veteran running backs coming back and Dylan. So you know, I don't think it's anything to worry about at all.
Yeah, the best friend of those wide receivers is going to be a great running game, and they should have that for sure. Well, listen, man, don't be a stranger.
Yeah.
Keep in touch. Anytime you want to hop on and talk Dogs, we always love to have you. And I appreciate you clarifying the age question. There was a rumor going around that you were 48 years old, so I appreciate you clearing that up, man.
No, yeah, of course. I appreciate you guys having me on, but before I go, I want to give a special shout-out to my buddy Tony Villa. He's watching. He's a frontline worker and nurse, so I just want to say I appreciate everything you've done.
I love
it. So.
Tony Villa. Tony, you're the man. Great stuff, Kevin. Thank you, and good luck to you, buddy. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, man.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good one.
You bet. Kevin Thompson with us on the air. And I appreciated the way you tried to pin him down on the whole starting quarterback thing, because all of us wanted to know that, obviously. And that's clearly a guy, and you can hear it in his voice, that did not want to take anything away from Dylan Morris.
Of course.
And that's totally cool, right? I mean, whatever, fine. We're not going to hammer the kid. It sounds to us, and it sounds to a lot of people, like he was going to be the guy before he got banged up. But Kevin wants to just stay in the background and let Dylan have his moment and be the man and not take anything away from that. And I appreciate that. You know, it's funny because we're all kind of looking forward to seeing this quarterback battle. And, you know, Dylan has the upper hand right now because he's the returning starter. He's the incumbent from a year ago. But I think that there's a lot of folks out there that are making this into a two-man race between Dylan Morris and Sam Heward. And I'm wondering if that's a mistake, if we should include this transfer, Patrick O'Brien from Colorado State. You realize he is 6'4", 230, this guy, and he committed to Nebraska at a high school. Mm-hmm. He had offers from Colorado, Texas Tech, UNLV, Nebraska, Colorado State, ended up going to CSU. He's played in 18 games. You know, didn't put up the greatest numbers, obviously, and he transferred to Washington, but he's got one thing that these other guys don't have, and that's a lot more experience. So I'm curious to see if this O'Brien kid ends up being a factor at all, man.
Well, like you just mentioned, if, in fact, Kevin Thompson was going to be the starter for the Huskies, which mm-hmm. there's good reason to believe that he was going to be, then there's no reason not to believe that Patrick O'Brien is going to get every single chance to win that job, even though there's a one-year incumbent there in Dylan Morris.
Right, but he only played in four games, right? I mean, it'd be different, I guess, maybe if this guy had started 12 games and won a bowl game, all that. And, you know, I think Dylan absolutely should be the guy to take first-team reps. I mean, Jimmy Lake has confirmed that with us, that when spring ball starts next week, that Dylan's going to be the guy. I mean, Patrick O'Brien is 2019, 26 of 40, 290, couple touchdowns, couple picks against Boise State, threw for 350 and two touchdowns, a pick on Air Force, 420 and three touchdowns against New Mexico, threw for 400 on Toledo later that year. So again, you can talk and you can bark and dismiss the competition all you want, but this guy has put up some numbers. It's the same kind of situation like we talked about with Kevin Thompson. You know, Kevin had some games at Sac State where he put up pretty decent numbers. 18 for 26, 255, 70%, couple of touchdowns against Wyoming just last year mm-hmm. for Patrick O'Brien. So I'm curious about that. I'm also curious about Sam Heward in this regard. If you ever watched Kennedy High School play football with Sam Heward, that was a very quarterback-friendly offense.
Yes.
No doubt about it. He was throwing to awesome wide receivers. I think he had three guys he was throwing to that had at least one Pac-12 offer. He did not get hit a lot at Kennedy. And I think they threw the ball every down this year in the shortened schedule that they did play. Because remember, Sam took off three games early mm-hmm. to come over to UW and join the Dogs for spring football. So, you know, for a guy that wasn't touched a lot in high school, I'm just curious to see what happens when he gets hit. And how he handles pressure. I'm not talking about from the outside. I mean literal physical pressure
right.
from defensive ends and defensive tackles. When he was used to being, I think, semi-comfortable at Kennedy in the pocket, doesn't mean he can't be comfortable taking hits. Doesn't mean he can't handle it when he gets to UW. But, you know, he's going to be in a little bit of a different world when it comes to this offense versus what he had at Kennedy, I think.
No question, but he's a well-built kid. He's bigger than Dylan Morris is. Yeah,
sure.
I think he can handle the hits. And the fact that he's practicing in spring, I think, just massively improves his chances of being the starting quarterback. If he was just coming in
yeah.
in August
yeah.
and it's like, okay, 3 weeks and then
yes.
we're going to pick a starter,
yes.
I think that he would not have had much of a chance at all to get the starting nod. But everything's kind of lining up right now for Sam Heward. You had a shortened season last year, so the incumbent didn't get 12 full games. You've got Ethan Garber's out of here. I mean, everything is just kind of lining up for Sam Heward. And he gets Montana before he gets whoever starters gets Montana before they
yeah.
get Michigan.
Yeah.
So you got one game that you can see live bullets before you go to the big house. So
well,
that's big,
yeah.
too.
First of all, everybody's bigger than Dylan Morris. I mean, Russell Wilson looks at Dylan Morris and says, man, this guy's tiny. You kidding me? So I'm not sure if that's really anything to hang your hat on, but I like Dylan. I think Dylan's a gamer.
He's a gamer.
I think
he's
Dylan's a freaking gamer.
He's
so you know what? Honestly, Ask me who I want to see win the job. I don't even care.
Yeah, the best.
Just give me a star.
That's exactly.
It's time for UW to have a star again at quarterback. We'll get a break. 538, Everett Fitzhugh, voice of the Kraken, coming.
Energy Progress.
It's time.
And the Slotty scores!
For our weekly conversation with the voice of the Seattle Kraken.
The one-time bomb from the blue line.
Everett Fitzhugh.
On the power play.
Every Wednesday at 5:45, because we know that Everett Fitzhugh has nothing going on, literally is just cramming over pages and pages of notes, getting ready for the 2021 NHL opener and the Kraken debut. We thought we'd give him a break from his study and get him on the air and have a little fun. Everett Fitzhugh, the voice of the Kraken, back with us. How are you, pal?
I mean, you're actually not far off. I probably watched parts of two or three hockey games a night, much to the chagrin of my lovely wife. And man, just getting ready for the season to start. Watching Philadelphia and Buffalo right now, actually.
Well, so you're watching a Philly win. If you're watching Philly and Buffalo, I mean, the Sabres.
Buffalo's up 2-1 midway through the second, but Buffalo was up 3-0 a couple games ago, and they ended up losing 4-3 in overtime.
I was going to say, midway second, there's plenty of time for them to choke it off and lose their 19th in a row. I was going to ask you, the Rockets, Dick, had, what, a 20-game losing streak?
Yeah,
is
20,
that right?
At least
earlier
20.
This year, whatever it is. And I think since we last spoke about the deadline and Buffalo emptying their bench and getting rid of a bunch of players, they still haven't won. They've lost. How are you this bad in the NHL in 2021?
You know, it's like we were talking about last week, where to place the blame. Buffalo has changed coaches. They've changed GMs. They've drafted well. They've added some pieces in free agency. And I think a lot of it has to do with some underperforming players. You've got a lot of big contracts on that team. You have a lot of players who were drafted. And in the NHL especially, you want to have a deep system. It's very similar to baseball. You want to have a system and a minor league system and a team and an organization that does well from within. Not everybody can be the Yankees and go out and spend $300 million on contracts. But if you're Buffalo, you have a ton of talent that you've drafted, but just you've not been able to find the complementary pieces to go along with them. And I think that's what we're seeing now with Buffalo. A lot of players who have been in this league 3 or 4 years, coupling that with some young guys, maybe they were rushed a little bit too early, but they just can't seem to find that chemistry. And I think, you know, hopefully Buffalo's not going to approach the NHL record for losses in a row, which was set by the Winnipeg Jets, I want to say in the 80s sometime. That was a 30-game slide. So I hope for Buffalo's sake they don't get to 30, but it's not looking good.
Well, from the worst to the best, you were talking on Twitter the other day about your favorites for the Hart Trophy for the MVP. Yeah. So who do you got up top right now?
You know, Connor McDavid, I think, is the easy choice. The Edmonton Oilers aren't the Edmonton Oilers without Connor McDavid. There are a very few players in I think, sports, really, that are the best at what they do and can also make players around them better and really maximize their potential. And Connor McDavid is one of those people. Leon Draisaitl is another guy. Buffalo just scored again, 3-1. Leon Draisaitl, there we go. Leon Draisaitl is a player whose game has really been elevated because of McDavid. A lot of people credit McDavid helping playing with Draisaitl as the reason why Draisaitl won last year's Hart Trophy. So McDavid's able to make players around him better in addition to being the best player on the team. But I think if you look at the definition of the Hart and the most valuable player, it's the most valuable to your team. And I think for me, that's Patrick Kane. What he's been able to do in Chicago to help that team really defy all the experts. Everyone had the Blackhawks at the bottom of the standings. Now they're battling for that fourth spot in the Central Division,
And right now with Nashville, they're tied actually with Nashville for that fourth spot and 3 points ahead of Columbus. So because of Patrick Kane and his leadership and the fact that he's really brought in the Jeremy Culleton system there, they've been able to really find a spot and play some meaningful hockey here in March heading into April.
Well, Everett Fitzhugh, the voice of the Kraken.
In the slot, he scores!
Is with us on the radio show. You look at the four divisions, and man, things are tight at the top everywhere. Tampa and Florida in the Central have 50 points apiece. Carolina, a point back at 49. In the East, Washington, the Islanders, and Pittsburgh are separated by 3 points. The North, it's a two-point difference between first and third place. The West, Vegas, and Colorado have a point difference between the two of them. But how about the teams that are kind of right behind them? When it comes to, like, you know, the Minnesotas and the Edmontons and Nashville's, Boston, if there's a team that can come from the middle of the pack and make a run come playoff time, who is it in your mind?
You know, it's interesting you say that, because all four of the divisions, rather, are pretty solid in the top three. I think it's going to be 1, 2, 3 in no particular order. But number three and number four has a minimum of 7 points between them in each of the division, with a 10-point difference between third and fourth out in the Central between Carolina and Nashville. And as far as teams trying to get into the playoffs, I just mentioned Chicago and the work they've been able to do. I really like Montreal to see. I don't know if they can overcome that 7-point gap. But Edmonton and Montreal right now are on pace. If they keep this pace up, they're on pace for 68 points. Calgary and Vancouver, who are just 4 points back of Montreal at 35, they need 33 out of 36 points down the stretch to get to that 68-point mark. And I think that's maybe going to be that threshold for playoffs this year, is going to be 68 points. So can Calgary and Vancouver continue at the pace they're going while Edmonton and Montreal continue to get hot? I think in the West, obviously, you know, St. Louis and Arizona, that battle there is going to be something that I'm going to watch the rest of the way. But LA, only 5 points back of Arizona, they're 3-6-1 in their last 10 games on a 3-game slide. So LA did have some promise there for a second, but I think that they're starting to tail off. But, you know, it's interesting. Philadelphia has won 2 in a row. They're 3 points back of Boston. Nashville, Chicago, Columbus, all separated by 3 points for the fourth spot. There are probably 4 or 5 teams that could make a run, could just sneak into the playoffs. And I'm sure as many people in sports know, all you need to do is get in. And I think nowhere is that truer than the NHL.
Everett, we haven't talked about this in a while. They had that construction accident that damaged the facility up there at Northgate. Mm-hmm. Do we have any update on that and whether or not it's going to push back the opening or delay that at all?
You know, as of right now, and then from everything that we've heard, there's going to be no delay. We actually saw some photos of it not too long ago, and they've been able to get that repaired. There was no damage to the main portion of the facility. It was mostly up in the bar restaurant area. And at the beginning, they said that if there was to be a delay, it would maybe be a week or two. Okay. But I think we're right back on schedule for that fall opening. Still trying to nail down an exact date, but it will be early fall when the rinks open. Obviously, you're going to have to get the team and the players in there, and then a full opening of the facility sometime in October.
I love it. Everett, before you go, I want to ask you this. We live in a world where we are asked to support one another. I think sometimes within reason, and I think sometimes unreasonable. Do we live in a world where the Kraken will be tweeting out back the West when Vegas is in the Stanley Cup final, or the Canucks are in the Stanley Cup final? Are we going to be supporting our division rivals come playoff time if the Kraken are out of the tournament? And you know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, you know, so I think as good natured as we are, our social media team is dynamite, and I think that we could definitely get one of those, like, team romances going, kind of, and and back each other. I could, unless it's Vancouver. I really don't want it to be Vancouver.
Did you grow up doing that as a Michigan fan with Ohio State? You backed the Big Ten?
I did not, and I will die on this hill. I am a fan of two schools, Bowling Green, where I went, and Michigan. I don't care about the Big Ten. I don't care about the MAC. I don't care about Ohio State or Michigan State, or Toledo, or Wisconsin. I don't care. I care about my two schools, and if my two schools aren't in it, misery loves company. So I want you to fail as well, and then we can watch everyone else succeed together. But no, you're not going to catch me rooting for Ohio State in the national championship game for the sake of the Big Ten. Not a chance.
So your alma mater and the team that you root for as a kid growing up, that's it?
Yes, that is it. Okay. That is it.
Okay. None of those fall into your category, by the way. Don't give me that look. I know what you're thinking back there. I know what you're thinking.
You asked them a college question about a pro team.
Well, I'm trying to use that as a tool to get to the conversation about supporting
like
a conference. Exactly. It was okay, a mechanism, gotcha, is what it was. All right, Everett, you're the man. Great stuff.
Thanks, man.
Enjoy the Sabres and Flyers, man. And maybe if the Sabres win, we'll have you on next week throwing a party for them, buddy. Appreciate it.
I'll crack open a nice cold Coors Light if the Sabres get the win tonight.
There you go. All right, dude. Do that anyway, by the way. You don't need a Sabre win to do that. Yeah, yeah. And some Kraken rum while you're at it. All right, Everett Fitzhugh, voice of the Kraken. We'll get a break. Let's hear from the skipper, Scott Servais. The M's are 25 hours away from getting things going tomorrow.
Yay!
Against the Giants. What does the rotation look like? What's the story with Kyle Lewis? The skipper, Scott Servais. We're going to hear from him next.
Now, from the Star Reynolds Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, here we go. Headlines on Softy and Dick on a gorgeous Wednesday night right here on 950 KJR. Brought to you, of course, by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Does size matter? You bet it does.
So picking up on the conversation with Everett Fitzhugh last segment, the Buffalo Sabres have not won a game since the 23rd of February. They currently, late second period, lead the Flyers 4-1. As we speak, so they can't get this done. This would be an all-time cougat for Buffalo.
Exactly.
Toronto up on the Jets, by the way, also in the NHL. 2-0 late second period there.
Seahawks wide receiver Tyler Lockett, a richer man now than he was yesterday. 4-year extension worth $69 million, including $37 million guaranteed, and the Chiefs make it official, signing former Hawk defensive tackle Jaron Reed.
69.
Damian Lillard's got 26 mid-fourth quarter. Blazers lead the Pistons 99-85. Pacers up on the Heat mid-fourth 82-81. Dallas so far getting 24 from Luka, and they lead the Celtics 69-51. Early third quarter from Boston. Rockets 75, Brooklyn 69. 7-11 left to go third quarter in that game.
69.
UConn's Paige Beckers has become the first freshman ever to win the AP Women's Player of the Year award. She averaged 20 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists a game for the Final Four-bound Huskies. And on their men's team, the sophomore guard James Bonite has entered the NBA draft. He will hire an agent.
Which drop do you like better, this one?
69.
Or
Jesus Christ, Jackson.
That one.
Let's see. College football. Wazoo quarterback Jaden Delora was arrested in February on suspicion of DUI. Nick Rolovich today saying Delora is still suspended, will not begin spring ball with the Cougars. All right, tomorrow, 7:10, Mariners-Giants.
Yay!
Over at T-Mobile Park. Scott Servais, skipper, after a workout today, meeting with the media, lots to talk about here, including an update on Kyle Lewis, the rotation, James Paxton, the whole spiel, the skipper, before they get things going tomorrow for real, meeting with the media this afternoon.
Everybody's got questions. You know, is Kyle Lewis going to be ready to go opening night? He is not. We are going to hold him back. And, you know, he does have a pretty deep bone bruise in his knee, his right knee. You know, could he go? Possibly. This is a training staff, myself call. We are in for the long haul here and playing the long game and what this season's going to take, just having everybody moving forward for the big chunk of the season. So Kyle's going to be out a little bit at the start of the season. It's unfortunate. He was just starting to get it going before he banged his knee there about a week ago. So that's the one piece of news that I'll throw out there because I know everybody's got questions looking at our opening day lineup. So With that, I'll take any questions you guys have.
Scott, will he open the year on the IL, though?
Yes, he will. Yes, he will. And we will activate Marmolejos. Will be active on our roster.
Scott, are your training staff pretty confident that Kyle will be ready to go by the time the 10 days are up?
Well, I think so. You know, we'll just have to wait and see. We're probably, I don't know, in my mind, I want to give him probably a couple weeks just to make sure it is 100%. It is not at 100% right now, and I do not want to risk running him out there and something else happens. But his knee is totally fine. It's structurally fine. There's no issues with that. It's a bone bruise, and we want to be really smart with this one.
Is he just resting at this point, Scott, or is he taking part in any light workouts at all?
No, he's not working out today. You won't see him out there today.
Have you finalized the rest of the roster as well?
Pretty much so. We will have one other adjustment as well in our rotation and just on how we're lining them up. Obviously, Marco will go tomorrow night. We originally had Pax going in game two. We have shifted that. Pax will go in game five. And Kikuchi, who has been on a normal schedule, he'll be ready to go. Kikuchi will pitch in game two against the Giants. So it will go Marco, Kikuchi, Flexen. The White Sox series will line up Sheffield, Paxton, and Dunn.
Scott, what's the reason for the switch with the rotation?
Yeah, I think, you know, looking at how the spring played out with Pax, I just want to give him plenty of time to get before he gets going and cranking it up. He threw the ball really well the last couple times out. But you remember, he was a little slow to get going into the A games. And you know, you got to pitch in an A game. I think he picks up the intensity quite a bit. So it just gives him a couple more days to, you know, make sure he's good to go his first time out there. So, and again, Kikuchi's on normal rest. We've kind of had it lined up. We could go either way, you know, as we got through spring training. So, you know, it made the most sense just to Kikuchi's been throwing the ball great as well. So we'll run him out there in game two.
Isn't it funny that it feels like it's been 5 years since the M's last played a game? Maybe it's just because the fans are coming back. It feels real now, but they played 60 games a year ago. They played in September of last year, and it feels like it's been forever since they've played a baseball game and since we've had a rotation. And I can't we just kind of made some history there. First time ever you heard a manager talk about a six-man rotation going into a season for the M's. Gonzalez, Kikuchi, Flexen, Sheffield, Paxton, Dunn. Had to kind of do a what? Oh, yeah, they have a six-man rotation now.
I kind of felt last year was a 80-game spring training. I could never get invested in it. I just couldn't. I mean, I sat down and would watch a couple innings, and I'd just be like, it just doesn't mean anything. A 60-game baseball season meant nothing for me. And even when they were 23 and 24 through, you know, 47 games, and, they're two games out of the wild, I could not care one bit. But now I am back. Tomorrow will be the first day that I legitimately sit down and watch an entire baseball game in 18 months.
Well, it's funny you say that, because Fernando Tatis got $340 million because of that season he played a year ago.
Yeah, meant something for him.
Trevor Bauer got $102 million.
Meant something for the Dodgers last year.
Six games that he played in a year ago. Right. I'm talking about players.
I mean, right.
These guys barely did anything. They played for what would be the equivalent of one-third of a regular season, basically, and they got paid almost $500 million total combined.
And from a team aspect, I'm glad the best teams made the World Series and the best team won the World Series, because I would look at it totally different. If some team just snuck in one game over 500, happened to get hot over a three-week period of time and won the World Series after a 60-game season, that would have been weak.
You're saying if the Mariners would have won the whole thing, it would have been weak? Chew on that. We'll talk tomorrow about it. We'll get a break. What do we got coming up next? Florio, is that right?
Petros,
sorry, my fault. Petros Papadakis is going to join us on the radio show. You missed our conversation today at 4:20. Shame on you. Where the hell were you? We're going to give it to you one more time, and that's it. Petros Papadakis. There was a court case today with the NCAA and the Supreme Court. Petros weighs in on that next.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.